Hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dunbar. Today, Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. What is a vent? A vent. You know, you get a vent, you have air conditioning, and the place the air comes through is a vent. You have too much heat in a room, and the place you let the air out is through a vent. A vent. It's like letting stuff escape from confinement. Therefore, we're going to talk today about venting. You know, venting, which is what people do sometimes when they get so frustrated they got to tell somebody. You're venting. It used to be an expression, venting your spleen. Did you ever hear that, Stephanie? No. The spleen was known as the seat of anger. The spleen was known as the seat of anger. And so in the old days, in the 1800s and early 1900s, they would say when a person was yelling, they were venting their spleen.
I never heard that.
Never heard such a thing. Good. Look it up. It's in there, I'm sure. See if you find it, right?
Yeah.
Venting your spleen. Well, what's the idea behind it? Is it good? Here, Stephanie and I sit and we talk with many people who come in wanting to talk about stuff. And we ask the following question. We, as people who are supposed to help people get better, ask ourselves, is this good or is it not good to vent? So when do we vent? Most of the time people are venting is when they feel frustrated. You know, you feel frustrated with something, you want to tell somebody about it. So you vent to your friend, you say to your friend and you complain. Or your mother or your family and you're just complaining. Is it good to do that? Does it release enough pressure so that you can then calm down? Is that what it does? Well, that's one theory. You find a therapist, you go to your therapist, you vent. Your therapist listens. Does it make you feel better? Well, mostly people feel better after they vent. They feel better. But we don't know if they've helped themselves. Some people do it in the nail salon. They go to their hairdresser, venting. Bartenders, cab drivers, vent. You know, these are people who are professional listeners for venters. You know, here comes a venter. So the person wants to scream and they say things. They say, oh, those rotten people. They do so-and-so, and all the rich people and all the poor people, they just say things. What's your job when people are venting? What are you supposed to do? Well, I want to talk about venting and how it works and doesn't work. The good side of it. Sometimes you just feel so alone, and you want to connect with someone. And if you have a good friend who knows that you're venting, they don't have to validate what you're talking about, but they could validate you. They could say, you're important, and whatever you feel and what you have to say is important. Whether they agree with you or not, it is not even an issue. They're validating you, not what you're talking about. Because, here's the problem. Sometimes you get a thought that follows something that happens inside your body. Let's say you get nervous. I have a friend who drank coffee, and she drank some freshly made coffee, and the next thing you know, she was talking about being worried. She wasn't worried right before the coffee, but then she started talking about, oh, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about, and her mind started going a mile a minute. Sometimes the thought follows the nervousness, not the nervousness follows the thought. In fact, I'm willing to bet that mostly worrisome thoughts follow bodily sensations. That the bodily sensation comes first, and then the worrisome thought follows that. A good example of this is night terrors, right? Night terrors. When they do people who have night terrors, right? These are people who wake up in the middle of the night very worried. What happens first, they've seen on brain scans, is first the amygdala starts firing, and there's a rapid onset of the amygdala firing energy. Then next the brain says, oh my God, something's wrong, we're very nervous. what are we nervous about? And it hunts for things that might be dangerous to you. Oh, I'm nervous about the test I have to take tomorrow. I'm nervous about going to work. I'm nervous about the letter I wrote. So your mind hunts for it, and the mind hunts for the very thing that really was started by energy. Do you know what I mean? In fact, we've seen some studies by people with post-traumatic stress disorder about people where venting works the opposite, not relieving, but in fact creating a problem.
Yes, we just came across this research, Armand, that was done at the University of Buffalo. And this doctor, let's see what his name is. Dr. Vent. Dr. Mark Seary in the University of Buffalo. He came across, people who either had post-traumatic that vented versus were quiet. And they realized that a lot of people sometimes actually are harming themselves if they vent around a post-traumatic event. And people that are quiet sometimes actually probably fare better in the long run.
Well, let's talk about how that might work chemically.
Okay. So they just explained the observation, but then, of course, we had to figure out what might be going on. And I remembered the information that we gathered from researching Joseph Ledoux, who works on fear and the amygdala. And he was able to come up with this understanding of how memories are formed. So when we have an event that happens that's traumatic, we have a memory of it, and that's considered a temporary memory. And then when it goes into a long-term memory, that will be there for us to think about in the future. And this is a process called consolidation or reconsolidation.
So how does it work? You think about something, and then you think about it and you vent it. Now what happens is your brain cell forms another cell to add to the cell you have?
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell you what the process exactly is, but I do know that the time that we're remembering something is a memory of the memory.
Right, and now this is very important. We are always remembering a memory of the last time we remembered it. And according to some theorists, every time we remember it, it gets bigger.
Well, it gets more kind of, I guess, rooted and consolidated and more firm.
Yeah, it's more firmly planted.
Right. And so,
it's like if you were to take a flower out of the ground, a tulip out of the ground, that you planted and it gets longer roots, every time you plant it, it's going to go deeper.
Exactly.
Good metaphor?
That's a good image. But the problem then, what they were trying to understand is how can we help people not have that post-traumatic memory go from a temporary memory to a long-term memory, which is the issue is that causes the problems later on in the person's life. And what they found was Joseph was able to introduce what's called a protein synthesis inhibitor, which is some compound, I guess.
I know exactly how it works.
Okay.
Dexyntoxycyclohexanide.
Oh, good.
Worked with it myself.
Right.
Drink it with my milk every morning.
Okay, and that substance has the ability to quiet the amygdala from firing, and I think that's the key that allows the short-term memory to lessen in strength.
You know, protein synthesis inhibitors are very important because when you inhibit the synthesis of the protein, that means replicating this protein, you don't have additional protein, which makes it not as thick. It's that kind of simple.
Okay.
And so, you know, like alcohol is a protein synthesis inhibitor of memory.
Well, that makes sense,
and
right?
And people forget, right.
Exactly.
That's why they don't remember. So protein synthesis inhibitors are very powerful. When we are just on our own and we're talking, we don't have inhibitors. We're building more strength to whatever we're worried about or saying.
And I think that's what venting does. The more you talk about something, probably specifically if it's a trauma, okay, but even in everyday life when someone's saying, you know, my boyfriend had an affair, he went out of the relationship, whatnot, that talking, that constant focus on that is giving it strength and momentum.
Momentum to disturb you. I know a man who listens to the woman he loves And she had a habit of doing he said, she said. I said to my mother, baba, baba. Then my mother said, baba, baba. I said, and then she said, and then I said, and then she said, and then I said. And they have a need, and you'll see this with certain people, to replicate a conversation in your presence. Instead of describing to you, I talked to my mother and she decided she's going to work, right? Instead of that, they give you the entire dialogue, and this whole thing drives it further and further and further to make it more real. What he does is he says, no, please don't tell me the stories. I don't want to hear stories. I don't want them filling my brain. Please tell me what you feel. Tell me what you care about. Give me a synopsis. You know? And she feels loved by him. She doesn't feel turned away by him. As opposed to the other husbands who may feel the same way, but they just diss their wives. They don't explain it.
Yes, right.
Or wives who do that with their husbands. You and I don't know, did you invent the word palabres with me? Or was that my word?
I did, Armand.
Yeah, right. We created a word, both of us being Italian. We once decided that the very language that people talk in, when they're really not saying anything but talking about something, we called it palabres. And people speak palabres to each other all the time, from the word palabra, which means a word.
Yes.
Palabres. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it.
I just want to add, you want to talk about palabres?
No.
I want to finish the thought about, and it's interesting that you did the show on silence yesterday.
Yesterday.
So in this study, they say, you know, just because a person is quiet, very often that the idea in our culture is as soon as a trauma happens, get the rescue team in, get the people talking about it. And that's actually what's coming out is that that's not a help any longer. That sometimes for people that are quiet, they're not in denial. They're processing it differently, and they are not pathological. So the newest information is that we're not really doing such a service to people to make them talk about something over and over again.
It's not all about repression.
And repression and denial is very helpful for a lot of reasons in life. Otherwise, we'd all be walking around feeling all these things and worrying all the time. So
now, if somebody comes into therapy, Stephanie, and they come into therapy and they want to talk about their boyfriend, my boyfriend, my boyfriend, my boyfriend, and our job is to get that person better, not about their boyfriend, but our job is to get them better. We have to sidestep the boyfriend stuff. Many therapists I know do nothing but talk about the boyfriend. I mean, they charge you the money, you come in, let's talk about your boyfriend. Oh yeah, he said, she said, I said, well, what did you feel? And they drive this deeper and deeper. If you're with a therapist that you talk to the same way you would talk to your cab driver, examine that relationship. Now, the therapist could be validating you, but not agreeing with you, not biting it. For example, if you were to say to a therapist, so I talked to this man, and he wouldn't look at me while I talked to him. And you said that to your therapist, and you said, and I know he was rejecting me, and I know he was angry at me, and I got very upset. If the therapist were to say to you, you're very sensitive to rejection. See, they're not talking about the incident. They're bringing you home. They're saying, this struck that chord in you. If you were to say, I was very nervous. If the therapist asks you, so what were you doing right before you had this fight? What happened? What was happening? If they examine it with you, they're not just validating the venting.
But they're not disregarding you.
And they're not disregarding
you. That's what was really nice what you said earlier. You get validated when a person listens to you. That doesn't necessarily mean they agree with what your perception is.
Venting is quite a thing because, you know, venting is at the basis of lynch mobs. You know, somebody walking down the streets venting, you know, kill him, kill him, kill him. You know, people get together and they vent, they could work up quite a storm. Now, you talk about that storm and how it affects you chemically. what happens when somebody continues to vent, Stephanie? You talked about cortisol.
Yeah, that's another interesting piece of information. We make the assumption that a person should really let off the steam and express themselves and go out and tell a person off. Yes, anger is always going to be there, Armand. We have to deal with that emotion. But if we do it over and over again, where we're just escalating our emotions, screaming at the top of our lungs, we are really actually doing harm to our bodies, our minds, with all those chemical releases of constant cortisol flowing through us. It actually hurts our bodies, and it doesn't really solve
it. What happens when you have a constant flow of cortisol? You block off certain other things like oxytocin and other things that might be possible that might make you feel connected.
Exactly.
Cortisol makes you feel like you're at war.
Right. You're in battle.
You're in battle all the time.
So the idea really is, it's you do need to express your anger. You do need to assert yourself and explain to a person, you know, this hurt me when this happened, and I feel angry. But it's not about actually, like, just, you know, blowing off the steam.
It's not venting.
That's the latest information and research that we've come across.
We have found, however, that with people who are very depressed, who always beat themselves up, one of the first things we do is have them vent towards the outside first, away from the self, because another way that people vent is through self-criticism. You could hear people beating themselves up all the time, and they're usually depressed. That's another form of venting. You say things to yourself about how miserable you are, how rotten you are. You talk about yourself in a denigrating way. See, this is another form of venting that we want to interrupt, because each time you do it, you drive it a little deeper. You drive it just a little more solid. Armand DeMille, Stephanie Dombra, heal you with the positive mind. There's good news and bad news about venting. Venting makes you feel connected to people. You have a good friend. You have family. But now we have this other part of it. There's a venter and a listener. Actually, there's a website that's called blahtherapy.com. Blahtherapy is a place where you could choose one of two sides. You could either be a venter, or you could be a listener. Now, what is it about listening to somebody vent that makes you want to sit there? What do you think, Stephanie? Why would you want people to vent? I have a good friend who said to me the other day, he said, I love to hear people vent. I said, why? He said, because people are so unique. He said, I can't believe the way they think. He said, and when they tell me their experience, I look at it like a painting unfolding, because he's removed from it. But he looks at them, talking to him, and they're saying, I'm upset about my garden. The deer ate my shrimp. You don't have shrimp in your garden.
Shrimp?
No. You don't grow shrimp in your garden?
I don't think so, Armand.
Okay, so you say it, right? And you're upset about it, and he'll look at you and say, shrimp? In his mind, because he said it's unique. It's about the wonderful landscape. So some people listen because they want to be valued, because it's a way of having people like you, and because people are unique. But you're not necessarily doing the person a favor by listening, unless you may be helping guide them back to themselves. How do you do that, Steph? How do you guide a person back to themselves when they're venting to you and you're listening? What if it's somebody in your family, for example?
Well, I think that if you hear them making some progress in a problem, because most of the time a person's going to vent, and it's not just going to be vent and then solve the problem. That's like a perfect world if a person does that, where they just take action. So it's a process. People call up and want to talk to their friend, their sister, and so you say to them, okay, that didn't work, that did work. What can you do now about that? You know, if a person is reasonable, I think sometimes people need to understand that they're reasonable in their perception. So you can often say that, yeah, that makes sense. You're grounded in reality. That's what I might say to somebody. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you can change the circumstance just because you view it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think very often when a person says to you that they have when you're listening, you may have an axe to grind. So it's very difficult if you're talking to your mother about how you're angry at your father, that your mother doesn't have some axe to grind in there, some opinion, some investment in the outcome. She either wants you to love your father or she wants you to hate your father. So she's going to validate your anger or she's going to invalidate your anger. All triads are like that. Whenever you have two people talking about a third, two people in a family, two brothers talking about a sister, two brother and a sister talking about mom, it's always fraught with personal investment. You know, like you may have an older brother who hates his younger brother because the younger brother gets all the attention. The younger brother complains, and the older brother says, yeah, you should complain. You should go join the army because he doesn't want you to be around there. So you have to be careful. Boyfriends and girlfriends, very difficult, because if you're somebody in a couple and you talk to somebody who's not a couple or somebody who's in an unhappy relationship, they may guide you to validate your irritation so that your relationship is as bad as theirs. How do you know? So people have investments in what they say to you. They have investments in what they say back, or they may have an investment in you. I know one woman who talks to her. She has many male friends. She says, most of my friends are men, which usually means she's a dominant woman. She has friends who are men. They're not pressing on her. And she talks to them about her dates. And they all tell her how horrible these men are. Well, there's a thing that happens to men. There are very often men who have issues with their mothers. They're attached to their mothers. And they're very angry at their fathers. Common theme. They become confidants to their moms. So mom says to them, you know, oh, your father's a rat. And the kid feels like, oh, I'm closer to mom now because she could tell me. Well, this very thing goes out there on the town. And so if a woman meets a male friend and says to him, that man, the guy I'm going out with is a rat, he goes right into that mommy and daddy thing. Oh, mommy, you're right. That guy's a terrible guy. And again, you don't know where it's coming from. So part of it is venting works, but it could really screw you up. This funny thinking that people get into. I wonder how much of our children have been destroyed by I gotta have. You know, Stephanie, you take kids in school, in grammar school, who are about material possessions, where somebody has one toy or an application or a thing, and the other kid sees it, and that person's getting, you know, entrained to it, and now the brain is saying, you have more power if you have this toy. What happens to our kids? What are we teaching them? You know, by validating what power is. So power is not being angry. Power is not yelling at people. Power is also not suppressing all of your feelings. You know, venting is a very questionable thing. If you want to be a good friend to people, don't let them just vent. Try to either help them, be there. Don't give advice. Because here's the wonderful thing about advice. Nobody ever takes it. If somebody comes to you for advice and says to you, I'm going out with this guy, and I went home, and I caught him in bed with somebody else, what's your friend going to say? Dump the bum. A week later, you come back. Well, I'm still seeing him because he said he's never going to do it again. Right? And your friend says, but you've had this happen before. Get rid of him. And you come back a third time and they say, yeah, but I love him. How could I do it? Something strange goes on with soliciting advice from people about relationships. The advice is never taken. You know, and so you try to get advice, but the advice is useless. So I never give advice. I never tell people what to do. They ask me and I say, I don't know. What do I know? You know, what do I know about that situation? Because I don't believe the situations. I don't believe 99% of the stuff that people hold as really important. Because most of it is just coming out of some escape vent in them, but not dealing with the real issue. If you want somebody to take your side, I understand that. Is that the deal when you talk to somebody in the first place? Our telephone number here, by the way, is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. We're talking about venting and the need to talk. And keep in mind, I mean, psychotherapy is built on a talking model. It's called the talking cure, right? But it's the way you talk, how you talk, the way that we help you talk, the way that we try to retrain you. That, I think, really makes the difference. So in venting, one of the things you want to do is be able to, if you're going to talk about it, try not to let it be something that lets off steam. Try to see if you could find a calm place to talk about what disturbs you, what bothers you. Try to use your friend as a real resource, not a fake resource, to have them be somebody who could help you with it. Try not to solicit advice, because the advice is usually going to trigger something in you and you're not going to follow it, and your friend will be betrayed, and it'll separate you from them as well. Try instead to see what it's like to ask yourself the following question. Have I felt this before? Is this a common theme in my life? And what was I feeling right before? What took place right before I got so disturbed? Because when you get worried, really, really worried, and your mind starts getting worried, very often it's just a chemical reaction. The brain just goes for it. You know, if you feel disturbed, if you feel distressed, your brain just goes after it. It's going to say, what's the danger? What's the danger? Let me go find a danger somewhere. And it makes up stuff. Sometimes you have nothing to say. And when you don't have anything to say, you make stuff up to talk about. And then it winds up being something that becomes real, even though it wasn't real.
I also think there are other ways, Armand, that people can get that same sense of comfort or feeling after you talk or vent. Vent is really different than talking, I think. You know, people learn if they do the things to quiet themselves. You don't always have to talk a problem out. You can certainly do good things, walk, exercise, meditate, do things. And I think that builds confidence in people when they actually learn to soothe themselves and figure it out and then distance yourself from the issue. And then when you come back to it, you're going to say, oh, maybe that really wasn't such a big thing. So distancing and not escalating something is another way to handle your frustrations.
Well, time distancing is very important, Stephanie. I agree with you, because it's kind of interesting. You know, we'll sleep on it and come back to it tomorrow. Not such a bad idea.
No, it's really not.
Not such a bad idea. Is this as important? Oh, that whole thing I said to you was not important at all. I've got it all. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Padre Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back from the break, a little music, and then we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Mighty, mighty pretty music. The murmur of the morning breeze up there. The rattle of a milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music. Mighty, mighty pretty music. The singing of a sparrow in the sky. Perking of the coffee right nearby. That's my favorite melody. You, my angel. Fine music, and anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing this song. I hear music, mighty, mighty pretty music, the murmur of the morning breeze up there, the rattle of the milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music, mighty, mighty pretty music. The singing of a sparrow in the sky, the perking of the coffee right nearby. There's my favorite melody. You, my angel, phoning me. I hear music, mighty, mighty pretty music. wrong. I get me out of bed and sing pretty music. Pretty, pretty music. Get me out of bed and sing all day long. Pretty, pretty music.
And this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. 212-209-2900. What about your venting? What do you need to talk about? What are you curious about you? So many people, when they talk, they find themselves palabrazing. They say to themselves, this is not really true. But they find that the other person is really involved in the discussion. So they exaggerate it. I have seen people make things much worse than they are just by having validation of something that should have been validated in the first place. The bus driver yelled at me. Well, those darn bus drivers, you know. Somebody should deal with them. Yeah, let's deal with them. What should we do? Let's have a sit-in against bus drivers. Oh, okay, let's, you know. And you get a bunch of people, like lynch mobs, who have nothing to do, who bite on the suggestion that you have a chance to vent because it supposedly lets everybody's frustrations. This is an economy that challenges us. Doesn't every economy challenge us? I don't remember an economy that didn't challenge us. But we get challenges and we get frustrated and we try to pay the rent and we try to meet the bills and we try to deal with things and we get frustrated. But a lot of the things that we're dealing with are stuff that we've built. You know, like you put a big mortgage on a house and you want to keep your house going and you can't afford your house. So now the mortgage becomes the big issue, and then the new car you bought becomes the issue, and your possessions own you, and then you talk to somebody about it as if it's real. And you say, this house, I have to keep my house. And I remember talking to therapists who would say, well, she can't afford to lose her home. Big deal, home. A home is just the place that's around your head. Home is where your heart is. Home is where you bring yourself. You could be at home in an apartment, and you could be at home in a house. But we validate, you know. You're not allowed to take a person's home. Well, in this economy, people are going bankrupt right and left, letting their houses go up for sale. It's just a house. It's okay, my friends. 212-209-2900. Another friend of mine had an accident with his car. And he had a very fancy car. And I asked him, I said, well, how do you feel? He said, it's a car. He said, nobody got hurt. It's a car. Let's take one of your calls.
Not yet.
What are you on the line here? Hey, call us up and tell us about you and your frustrations and your aggressions. Now, Stephanie, you know, there are certain conditions that people have, hallucinations, where I often wonder how the hallucination gets fed by your reaction to the hallucination. So if you're seeing something or thinking something that's not really there, you say it to people. And you say, look, there's somebody who is spying on me. Now, if you're the therapist and you say, no, they're not, that doesn't necessarily help. But if you're the therapist who says, do you hear people doing this right now, I don't hear it. And try in some way to take it off from getting further energized. You know,
probably the force of a denial from someone else, the therapist or someone else listening, might charge up that person. You know, so you don't have to join in it, but you don't have to deny it either.
You know, it's in almost all mental illness. There is a thought process that's validating something that's not true. You know, extreme jealousy, extreme possessiveness, extreme fear, phobias. It's all about what your brain is doing around something that's not true.
Usually, that's what I have found. It takes a lot of effort to really understand what's real and what's just a perception.
So what is one of the arguments or one of the things that you've gotten into recently where you found yourself at odds where you thought that you had to deal with an issue. And you went to deal with it, and somehow you knew it wasn't getting better. See, how many times you have a conversation with your partner, your husband, your wife, and you think you're talking about an issue, and it's just not getting better. I have a rule in life. I believe if it doesn't get better after 20 minutes, if you're not closer to each other in 20 minutes, the conversation's not intended to go anywhere. Sometimes the conversation is just intended to help you build a fighting spirit. And people have conversations and arguments with each other where they're just fighting with each other over and over again.
Which is, again, Armand, that I think it's an idea that when people are fighting, they're really in this, like, chemical loop with each other. Because I have witnessed and watched people really calm down that whole thing, and they get out of it, and then they actually have, like, a smoother relationship. They might have another thing later on in a few months, but they actually realize, wow, we're in a really calm state for weeks. And I say, well, that's because you got out of that loop. And there is a difference when you bring that consciousness to the fighting.
Sometimes,
again, talking is good if it resolves things and you express yourself. But just that daily kind of venting to each other and frustration.
Mm-mm. Well, you know how you've got to listen, Stephanie? If two people are talking and one person is listening, and they're really listening, that's one thing. If they're listening to counter the argument, if they're listening and interrupting you while you speak, that's another issue. Because I want to hear what somebody thinks if they care about me and they have information to share. I want to hear it. But if they don't have it to say to me, if they don't have anything to say to me worthwhile, or if they're just arguing with me. A typical example of this is when you have somebody who seems like, it seems like you're a lawyer, and you have this kind of experience with another person where you're in a courtroom, and they start asking you questions like, where'd you go last night? I went out with my friend Tony. Where? Now, at some point, what seemed like an innocent question throws a little flag up in your brain that the energy behind this is not just curiosity. Who'd you talk to? You always talk to Tony like that? And stuff starts building, and you could feel the attack coming in your direction, and you know something's going wrong. And yet you don't stop it. Now you're on the defensive. Well, he called me first. No, it's not on my cell phone. No, I didn't text message him. And you're defending yourself like you're in a courtroom, you know? And it's like you're being tried and found guilty, and you're constantly on the defensive. And you don't know it, but you're saying it over. You're defending yourself, and you want to get out of it. But you can't stop it. You continue. This is what happens very often with venting. One form of venting is investigation. I'm going to ask you and inquire from you, and then I'm just going to nail you. I'm going to find every flaw in your conversation. Every flaw. 212-209-29 happened. 100, it happens so often to people. 212-209-2900. Where are my callers today? Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
I will give you a call when it comes in. Not yet.
Yeah, hey, how do you like that? The first time in a long time that we've had a chance to call it, have the lines open. I wonder, maybe there's something wrong with our lines. So the lines are open, my friends, and we are taking your calls. And we would love to hear from you, 212-209-2900. Sometimes, so this blah therapy thing is simple. You twist the proverbial soda bottle lid anonymously and you seek a release for this pent-up steam. Once you get to the site, you're either playing the role of the venter or the listener. Now, as a venter, you're given the floor to talk about anything that needs to be released from your mind. What needs to be released from your mind? What needs to be released? And do you have something in there right now that needs to be released? As a listener, you've given the floor to let the other person talk to you. And this thing that happens, that takes place, proves to you that it really doesn't matter what you're talking about or who you're talking to, because the very fact that you have a listener is an important thing. 12209. Oops, 2900. Hey, I'll be right back with you, my friends. I'll be right back. Hang in here. I did just see there's an article I wanted to bring to you. Just stay with me a second. And hi, Steph. Here we go.
I wonder on that blah therapy, which I think is funny, Armand. I wonder if that is different because you're writing it versus physically saying the words. I wonder if there's a different chemistry around that.
Lovely piece, isn't it? Well, there's the reason we figured it out. I had to call myself. I got some calls from the outside. People saying to me, hey, so now the best thing you can do is send me an email. Armand@thepositivemind.com. And maybe we'll be able to read it on the air. But there have been a number of people who have called and said they just can't get through. Something must be happening with our switchboard. Unfortunately, my friends, we're talking about venting your spleen. Did you find venting your spleen, Stephanie? Letting go of the aggression. See, back in the old days, people were told to keep their mouth shut, and most people were. You see it? There it is. What does it say? You're surprised, right? You're too young for this.
I am too young, I think. I never heard that phrase, Armand. Sorry. Okay, let's see. It just says to express anger. Politicians use the press conference as an opportunity to vent their spleen on reporters. Gee, that's nice and visual.
Vent your spleen. Sure, they would think, you know what they did with people in the old days? If a person was randomly angry, if a person was running around the street screaming, they removed the spleen. They did splenectomies.
Well, here's the reason that they say spleen, because it says it's from the idea in the past that the spleen, an organ in the body, was the place where evil intentions began. That's the idea.
So we'll take out your spleen as a cure. Then we have this thing about...
But what's interesting, excuse me, Armand, in a way, people can function without their spleen. Isn't that interesting?
They can, sure.
So what is it used for, in a sense? And if it's related to this idea of evil and
venting... Oh, the spleen is very important, for especially for reproducing white blood cells.
Yes.
Right? You need that.
But I think people still, with support, they can
function.
They find
other ways of doing it, sure.
Okay. It's interesting.
It is interesting. Armand DeMille here with you with a positive mind. So do you have a conversation that you need to have with somebody? Is there a conversation you would like to have? Is there somebody you would like to be talking to about something that you feel? What is the issue? Is there an issue? That's a real question. Is the issue real or is it not real? So we were going to take your calls today, but obviously the machine is not allowing that to happen. So we are taking a email from someone. Here they come. And I'm sorry for the mess today. We thought we had it so well planned for you that we would take your call today, because I love talking to you guys. It's just we had a way of having no direct communication with you. So being angry and feeling outraged is usually a reflection of an accumulation of some kind of chemistry in your body. If you don't sleep, if you're lacking sleep, if you're over-fired, you know, in so many different ways, sleep, irritability, stuff like that, makes you feel so much more ready. But when you're feeling irritable, you go and you talk, and you find a way to, you try to find something to talk about. You're trying to figure out, why am I feeling so miserable? So you pick up a case against everybody. It's such a pity. You know, it's such a pity, because one of the things we would like to do is to not, over and over again, you know, be blurting stuff out that hurts people. Because the worst part of it is the stuff you say hurts. Sometimes you vent your spleen directed at somebody and you hurt them. You say things that are like nails in a coffin. You know, they register and they just go in there and you say, and they say to you, it hurts, and they just don't want to take you on. And they hope that eventually you're going to stop. But you don't. And so they bury it.
Armand, what do you think about road rage? If that's part of this whole process. A lot of people are venting in the car.
That's right. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing, because I think the beauty of road rage, I don't like road rage. I don't like the rage against the other driver. But I like the fact that you could, if you have to vent, do it in your car. Scream at the top of your lungs if you have to. Because it's a safe place. Some people feel frustrated. Do it. You won't necessarily believe it. But to direct it at somebody else, absolutely not. Never with a vehicle like that. It's a murderous machine. But it happens. It happens a lot. I often wonder, I was talking with our guy yesterday about motorcycle clubs. And I said, if you have a Harley and you remove your mufflers so you make the loudest noise possible, and you're running down the road going past some nice, timid person who's driving in the slow lane, and you shock them out of their gourd, do you wonder what effect you're having on them? Do you think about it? Or do you get to a point where your rages are so powerful and so often that you don't care anymore? Is there a point when you're expressing anger all over the place where you don't care, where you're just in this place and you're validating yourself and you become the ugly American? You become the ugly person, you know? The ugly person, everybody hates you. Well, so what? They all hate me now. And I've seen people go in that direction. They say, everybody becomes my target.
Yeah, there's a man in my town, and he goes from shop to shop, And he blasts everybody. He is always frustrated. And I can see, I observe it, and I watch the people behind the counter. They don't have patience anymore with him. But there's some dynamic that goes on for people where they take their frustrations out on strangers and shopkeepers and also all over the place. But in terms of watching people who are driving, it's amazing because I think on a road, when you see people that are frustrated, there's absolutely no reasoning that's going on. It's all impulsive and primitive. They'll pull over and jump out of the car and want to do stuff. It's all on action. They're not using that part of themselves to say, wait a minute, should I do this? Which is the reasoning part. We're always in conflict as humans, I think. We have that instinctual driving force in us that just reacts, and then that whole other part of us that can reason ourselves down. And many times they don't catch up, you know, the reasoning part that says, okay, wait, think before you do this. So it that's when it gets scary, when you see people coming out of the cars. You know, a lot of times you see people just screaming. It's such a fascinating thing, and you're like, whoa, you know, how is this person going to
drive?
How do you
get so involved in this, you know? Yeah. But, you know, it's like you're screaming, but it's not you're mad at your father, you're mad at your mother. You're just filled with this rage at this point. Hey, we'll be back with you next week. Play a little more music. We'll be back with you next week, and by then we will definitely be able to take your calls on Tuesday. Yes? Yes, we'll be back
Tuesday's
on Tuesday.
Tuesday's the last day to do that.
And then
that.
Wednesday we won't be here, and Thursday we're doing a two-hour special on the Positive Mind during the fun drive. Do line yourself up for that, my friends. We will be back with you at that point. It's a good thing. Be back with you on Tuesday if you want to send me an email. Oh, remember that administrative job. If you want, you go to info@thepositivemind.com. You could also add info. You can send me an email if you want. Be back with you on Tuesday, my friends, at 1 p.m.
Me mira.